Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad. Which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Sensation Salad, only at Zaxby's.
Hello, and welcome back to the Pretty Little Podcast. We're your hosts.
My name is Phoebe.
And my name is Caroline. And today, we're going to be continuing a little bit of this deep dive into the Justin Baldoni-Blake Lively lawsuit. But we're going to talk about other things, too, of course. But I did do a lot of research last night, so.
Well, I'm excited because I don't know very much.
And here's the thing. Honestly, like, what I'm going to say is, and I don't know, I don't remember like how Team Blake I sounded in the last one. I know I was Team Blake. I think now I'm like, I don't know what team I'm on, honestly. This didn't make me Team Justin, and it didn't make me not Team Blake. But I think I have no clue at this point.
Yeah. Like,
and so much of this drama is based on semantics, is based on interpretations of text messages, which is something that I think we all understand. It can be very hard to like figure out what someone's really meaning. And if I want to read it a certain way, I can absolutely read it that way, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that's sprinkled in here. And then I think ultimately at the heart of this, we just have two people who do not fucking understand each other and don't speak each other's language and never should have worked together in the first place. But I don't know how you're expected to know that.
Also,
before you work with someone.
I've seen this talked about online a bit, like, because this isn't because these are just complaints and lawsuits. It's not like, I'm not saying that there's like non-truths in there, but it's not like, I've seen some people online be like, okay, well, what Justin's saying can't be false because it's in this lawsuit.
Yeah.
And it's like, but it's not, if you're not under oath, you can, it has to be proven. But,
right.
You know what I mean?
Well, and I think like it's not,
this isn't Bible yet.
No, because a lot of this is opinion. And I noticed that a lot more, I will say, in his lawsuit than in hers. I noticed a lot of the verbiage used.
Because hers was just a complaint, right?
Well, I'll get there. It was, but she's also filed a lawsuit. But that is something that will come up. But one thing is, like, in his, there's a lot of verbiage that's, like, talking about Blake Lively's narrative as self-serving and unreliable and all these things where it's like that is an opinion that you have, you know. We're just like, anyone who is Team Blake would say that Baldoni's, you know, statements are self-serving and whatever. So there were a lot of things. I also felt like his lawsuit, I mean, they're both kind of nasty, but this one, like, there's one moment where it talks specifically about Blake's PR girl, and it just throws in that like her PR firm used to be backed by Harvey Weinstein. And it has nothing to do with the complaint
at
all. You know, Leslie, I can't remember her last name, but it is Leslie something.
Leslie Stone. Wait, how does she spell it?
She spells with an E, unfortunately. But she...
That's the professional spelling.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Anyway, it like just throws that in there and then it doesn't say anything about it. So I'm like, they are just, but I know what they're doing because I did take AP Lang in comp in high school.
Oh, classic. Shout.
And
well,
so
I guess
did you.
You had Mr.
But we took different kinds of that class, I think.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
Okay, Mr. M. Shade.
No, you've just said that. Like, I got so much out of that class.
I did too. It was just, I was the first year of him teaching that class.
And literally,
whereas
this is like...
you had Mr. LaQuatra for like...
Yes.
He
and
had
there's
been teaching
nothing
that class forever.
Creative about this class, just so we all know. This class, there's nothing creative about the way they're teaching you how to write. And Mr. M taught all of the like imaginative writing and creative writing classes. So like, while I'm sure he was qualified to do it, I think the world that he teaches in is very different.
Famously in this class, my friend Dan told me I needed to sound more educated.
No way! I didn't know that.
We were doing a peer review and he read my essay.
Oh my God.
It was either him or Diana, but they both read my essay. And Dan said something else that I think he kind of did what, like, you know, the interview that Ariana has where she says, I want to see what you just said out loud on paper.
Yeah.
Dan like rewrote the sentence. Like, he wrote down the sentence that I had written that he didn't like, and he so that I had to read it again
With a bunch of question marks.
Yeah.
My favorite thing to do when I used to like peer edit people's papers is I would just like take a sentence and be like, I don't even know how to tell you what I'm just gonna rewrite this. And I just like write the sentence and be like, you could use this if you want, and then they like do. Anyway, okay, so we're gonna get into this. I feel like my notes are handwritten this time, so I don't feel like I'm as like organized as I was last time, but just bear with me. So first we have a file of notice of errata re complaint. Okay. Which basically they are saying that the New York Times purposely omitted stuff from the screenshots of the texts and that it created this false narrative that got people to hate Justin right away, but that it was like unground, like it didn't make sense. And so a lot of this case, you guys, is like hinging on the fucking upside down smiley face emoji.
And it's almost impossible to sue a newspaper.
Yeah, someone actually sent, are you quoting the message that we got sent last night?
Oh no,
we got a message last night from someone who knows more than I do, and I'm just gonna read it. I asked her if I could,
and we always go through our life with that idea when someone knows more than we do.
We're so excited when someone knows more than we do.
Yeah.
We're used to knowing everything.
Yeah.
Okay, so she said, little inside tidbit on his suit against the New York Times. It's almost impossible to successfully sue for libel against a newspaper, especially as a public figure. Baldoni would have to prove the Times intended actual malice, which would mean they knowingly published false information with the sole aim of smearing his reputation. And seeing as most of that Times piece was attributed to the allegations in Lively's lawsuit, he really doesn't have a leg to stand on, just in case that helps in your research and commentary.
It does help.
So I was thinking about that as I was reading it.
Is he suing them to get the money that he's going to have to pay out?
I'm wondering. Lively? It's also, well, okay.
Or to Sony, whoever ends up suing him.
So basically what they filed first this notice of error with the New York Times article saying you didn't include this and it matters. And the upside down smiley face was in the text between Jennifer Abel and Melissa Nathan that were like, oh, you did a great job with this piece. And then she said, well, that's why you hired me, right? I'm the best. And
with the upside down
the upside down smiley face was after. So Jennifer Abel texts Melissa Nathan and says, you really outdid yourself with this one, upside down smiley face. And Melissa Nathan responds, that's why you hired me, right? I'm the best. What they're saying this upside down smiley face means is that this was all a joke. And it obviously means that they are not the ones who sent in this story. Now, we're going to talk about this more. I'm going to say a few things about the emoji. The first thing is it makes it really tough because there's no like dictionary for emojis.
Yeah.
So everyone kind of uses emojis in a way that is specific to themselves. And it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing to everybody. So there is a little bit of an interesting like thing here where it's like, does it change it that much for me? I don't know. Does it change it enough for it to make sense in this law? I mean, I don't really know. If the New York Times did omit this emoji, that's a problem. That is a lie. You know, I don't know if they did. I don't know if they were
so
quoting
Did we not see those texts at all?
No, we saw screenshots of the text. They didn't have the emoji in it.
So how did they crop? Did they color out the emoji?
I guess. I mean, or in Blake's lawsuit, it was done that way. And the New York Times is reporting on what was given to them by Blake. So he's suing the Times for taking it out. But like there's a chance that Blake's team took it out and then gave it to the Times that way. And the Times never knew. But the Times also said that they have reviewed all of the text, like that they read thousands and thousands of documents and things. And they are doubling down on what they've written here. They are saying like, we are ready to defend this tooth and nail, like whatever. So then we have a lawsuit from Baldoni, but it's also from Melissa Nathan. It's from the Wayfarer Group. It's from James Heath. It's from like everybody who basically was named in Blake's suit. And they're suing the New York Times for libel, false light, invasion of privacy, promissory fraud, and breach of implied in fact contract. And they're demanding a jury trial, which is interesting. And Mom brought up a really good fact, like point about this last night, because Blake is now also demanding a jury trial. So Mom's like, well, I guess if you put it down on paper for a judge and you're like, okay, here's what this PR team was doing. Technically what they're doing, is it unethical? Absolutely. Is it illegal? No. Mm-hmm. So a judge might look at it and be like, sorry, you don't really have a case here. Like whatever. But a jury is going to look at the ethics of it in that way. Right. So that's why it would be really important for Blake to have that jury.
Why do you think he wants one?
I don't know. I'm trying to think I'm like,
and this
maybe
is me who doesn't know really anything about it, but it gives I don't mean to sound anti-man, mm-hmm. but it's giving like he's like this victimized man, and it makes him look more like the way that I'm seeing people interact with that fact online. People are like, see,
yeah.
he wants a jury. Yes. He believes in what he's doing so yeah. much that he can have a jury. He can stand a jury trial.
Yes.
And so I'm curious to know, like, I mean,
so one thing I think about that though, is that for Justin Baldoni, and here's another thing, like, I think his superpower is FaceTime with someone. So I don't know this man, but I have seen the effect he's had on people
yeah.
in his career. And he's a great talker.
I know Blake is also a beloved character, but she has such a much longer career and a more spotlit yes. career than he does.
With a lot more drama.
But he has, like, the amount of comments I see that are still, like, to them, he is the guy from Jane the Virgin.
Yes.
And they love him.
But it's also like, we have this character here who is, he is what we want men to be, right? On paper. He's this feminist, and mm-hmm. he's all about, I don't need to be man enough, and men need to say, I'm sorry. Like, on paper, we want every man to be like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, what a loss if he isn't. If he's not this person, that's devastating, you know? My take on this is we got a lot of egos at play. And I think another thing with Blake is, like, I'm sorry, this is terrible, but it's easier to like a man. In our world, people have a much easier time liking a man than they do have liking a woman, especially a woman like Blake Lively, who is powerful and is in a power couple and is rich and is beautiful and is best friends with Taylor Swift. Like, there are a million reasons that people want to hate her, and they can't find as many for Justin. So that ultimately comes to, and I mean, honestly, what's happening is, like, I don't know. Okay, so I'm going to get more into this. The jury trial, though, I think he believes that if he can get FaceTime with these people, he can make them love him.
Guys, he's gonna represent himself.
He's gonna say
put me in there, coach. I think it's gonna be Allison De Laurentiis on the stand. If they can just hear
the thing is, unfortunately, Blake Lively might be as likable as Allison De Laurentiis on the stand. This is something that's interesting. Initially, Blake Lively decided not to file an actual lawsuit against Baldoni and all of them. She just filed a legal complaint,
right.
like a civil rights complaint.
Yeah.
And it's basically called a right to sue letter. And what it means is there are no pleadings. It is confidential unless it's leaked, which obviously it was. And it doesn't subject the complainant to discovery. So basically, if she had, like, it says that her not filing an actual lawsuit and just, like, putting all this out there spares her the scrutiny of the discovery process. And it's really just an administrative complaint. So what Baldoni's lawsuit says verbatim is that pursuing legal action would have derailed her true objective, an orchestrated campaign to rehabilitate her public image. Now, here's what I want to say. So, like, low key, I'm like, And what about
it's kind of like tit for tat, low key.
If that was her goal here, to orchestrate a campaign to rehabilitate her public image, it is because it was broken. Like, that isn't a crime. And maybe the fallout hasn't been good.
And I'm sorry, the motive, and this is where, to me, it comes, like, Blake Lively as a person doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, okay, but if you still did the stuff, to me, the motive, I don't care about her motive.
Yeah.
I don't care why she filed the suit. If and again, you're going to tell me more and I might change my opinion at the end, but if the stuff that I read
yeah.
and the stuff that I've heard is true, then, like, sorry, I don't care if she did it to smear your reputation.
Well, that's the thing, is it's like, are we not just suing for the same things here?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's where I'm kind of like,
we said that last week when we mentioned that this
was
happening.
Like, and that is what this feels like a little bit, where it's like, okay, well, his objective in hiring Melissa Nathan and the agency group was to rehabilitate his public
image. And let's not forget, that's part of what put And that's what put Blake on the defense, is because
yes.
we see that you are hiring this team of people.
I don't know now. I mean, I don't know as much. So I don't know. We're going to keep going. But basically, that's my thinking on this, is like, pursuing legal action would have derailed her true objective. I'm like, okay, but you're acting like it's a gotcha moment with what her true objective was. I don't think it's a gotcha moment. I'm like, mm-hmm. of course that was her objective. Like, of course it was, you
right.
know, that's not surprising. I just went like this on my paper because I thought it was my iPad.
Oh my God.
Perfect.
Oh my God, guys, that is bleak. Not
okay.
just for you.
So it says that she weaponized the appearance of legitimacy conferred by a numbered legal document to launch salacious headline grabbing allegations and reshape her public persona, which I'm like, I mean, yeah, but again, it's not that it's not legitimate. I don't know. Okay. They're claiming now that it was Lively who orchestrated the smear campaign and that this Times article is her smear campaign. And what I just have a problem with this a little bit, because I'm like, okay, but that's exactly what you did. So you're now suing Blake for this. That's what.
And it's like, do you really want to put a spot, like,
you know what I mean?
Wouldn't you, if I'm them, I'm just a little bit like, I just want to kind of let this.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to now shine a light on the business of smear campaigns. No.
So they're also saying that the plaintiffs, which is Justin Baldoni, all them, have no intention, and Melissa Nathan and Jennifer Abel, have no intention of destroying or burying Lively. Now this, I don't believe. I just don't believe that. I don't believe they had no intention of that.
I mean, we saw those texts.
We saw the texts. And later on, there's a lot in this suit that is like a response to what Blake put out there, which is like, okay, Blake said this. We're saying this. We're going to get into that. But there's also a lot that wasn't answered. And I'm like, that upside down smiley face text is not the only text
I have
that
questions
makes
about.
Me think you guys did this. And they're acting like, I mean, they literally say the entire case hinges on that conversation and that emoji. Well, like, and I just disagree with that.
It's like what we said, I think last week we were talking about the text that was like, when they, because I had read what the lawyer said before the whole suit came out, when he was like, this is going to completely shift everybody's idea of what happened. Mm-hmm. And we were like, okay, unless you show me the text before, when she says, I can't say to him that we're going to bury her, even if basically we are.
Well, they do show us those texts.
Do we get the text before?
Yeah.
Because that text is the one that really stuck with me. And then also the one where they're like, because they're like, oh my God, he doesn't know how lucky he is.
Yeah.
When he says like the fat shaming, the
there
kissing.
Was a part though to that, like a text right after where they say, even if it's not true.
Oh.
So, but I'm like, that doesn't mean it's not true.
Right.
Just because they texted that does not mean that it's not true.
But I guess.
Okay. So this, I think, is crazy. On page 5 of the legal complaint, there's a screenshot from a group chat with the agency group team. Okay. Uh-huh. And they send in, Jennifer Abel sends, it ends with us, Sony chief praises Blake Lively for advancing the conversation around domestic violence. They send this article. And Jamie Heath, who is like the co-founder of Wayfarer Group and works with Justin, says, so glad Blake was praised. Let her get a win. It would be nice to have a Sony executive praise Justin. They are saying that this is a nice text and shows that they were happy that Blake got good recognition and et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, if you're going to say that we need to interpret the intention between all these texts and the upside down sign of all these things, then I'm sorry, but I don't believe that. So glad Blake was praised. Let her get a win. It would be nice to have a Sony executive praise Justin. That to me,
it doesn't
especially read. Knowing the company that he's sharing that message in, which is the agency group who was hired to protect Justin against Blake. I don't think that was a nice text. I think you want us to make it that way in this. So there are a lot of, that's what a lot of the suit is. It's like, well, depending on how you read this, it could be either way. So that's one thing that I thought was like,
we need
a little bit weird.
All these juries, we need like, old people.
I know.
Who don't have access to the
internet.
And
they need me.
Well, they need you on the courtroom
floor.
And
they need me on the courtroom
floor. Guys, Caroline is actually going to
be the judge. I'm representing myself in this. I know that sounds confusing, but I'm part of it. And I'm representing myself because I'm not representing either of them because I don't know if I believe in either of them, really. But I just thought this was interesting. And I also think, like, why wouldn't you want Blake to get praise and get a win? She's the star of your movie.
Yeah.
You know? And let's also mention, this movie had a $25 million budget. It cleared $350 million in the box office.
And it's still like doing well. It's like, well, it was the number one movie on Netflix for a while.
So it is a little bit like, okay. Anyway, moving on.
It's not like it was a colossal failure. Because that's another thing. All these comments I see that are like, man, this was his project for 5 years. And she came in there and stole it from him. And it's like, but it still did really well.
Yeah. And I'm going to talk more to that as well. So we get further evidence of the Times' complicity, and it arises from its apparent endorsement of the criminal and altercation of these texts by Lively, which is what they're saying, getting rid of the smiley face. And I said, read number 11 on page 8. So I'm going to do that. Okay. In her CRD complaint, so that was the initial legal complaint, Lively deliberately excluded not only the preceding screenshot of the text exchange disproving Nathan's involvement in the story, but also the upside down smiley face emoji, which fundamentally alters the sarcastic tone of Abel's message and misleads the reader into interpreting her response as serious. This omitted context is critical, as it demonstrates that each subsequent message in the exchange was similarly intended as sarcasm, including Nathan's statement, "That's why you hired me, right? I'm the best." Further review of the text message exchange, also excluded from both Lively's CRD complaint and the Times article, unequivocally shows that Abel and Nathan were engaging in a sarcastic and joking manner, as evidenced by the use of the ha-ha tap-back reaction. When read in full, the exchange reveals Nathan and Abel engaging in facetious juvenile banter, not conspiring against Lively. I just don't know that, though, because then they show us these texts.
I also, do you know what they look like? That's something that I still can't, I don't understand, how they removed just the emoji.
I mean, it's not that hard.
It just feels weird to me.
I guess, but they have, and I just encourage you all to go look at it, because I don't know how to, like, read this, but they show the text as featured in the complaint and then, the truth with the emoji. But I'm sorry, I don't think that anything else they include here makes it clear that this is all sarcasm. What I think happened here is they keep saying throughout the complaint, like, look, we didn't have to do any of this. We didn't have to do any of this. She did it all to herself. She's saying all this. She showed her ass in interviews, whatever. I agree they didn't have to create the bad press for Blake, but they did hire people to get her name trending, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, they did hire people to just start speculating and talking and creating forums where people want to put in this information about right. her. So while, yes, Blake did all these things, the smear campaign isn't fabricating things that Blake did. It's just bringing them all up to blacken her name and tarnish her reputation, which absolutely happened. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, she is unlikable and she is a diva and she did all these things. I don't know that they would have organically come up. She's been in plenty of movies right. and this shit hasn't come up. So it's like, yeah, if you paid someone $150,000 to find every bad thing on me and circulate it, you could find people who I knew in eighth grade who wanted to tell you one bad thing about me and go put it on Reddit and turn it into a huge thing. No problem. I still had that conversation with that person in eighth grade, mm-hmm. but you never would have fucking known about it if no one hired someone to find it or create the place for it to come out. And that's what they did. So that's where I'm like, let's acknowledge, you know, I know that she did all this to herself, because Justin Baldoni is frequently like, oh my God, are we planning all this? Are we planning all this? And they're like, no, she did it herself. But I mean, she did it 10 years ago. So some of this stuff, I'm just like, I don't know.
And she didn't do anything like overtly crazy during the press tour that would have.
Well, people think she did. I mean, people think the hair care and the stuff was overtly crazy. Now, I was looking for like specific, if someone can find, because I think I just lost track of time, but I was trying to find specific moments where she like deliberately plugs the hair care brand on the red carpet and stuff. So if anyone has some, show me, because I'm like, there's also a difference between simultaneously promoting a hair care brand outside of a movie and then also promoting a movie and like,
yeah.
So I don't know how much of it is like that. So yeah, so they're saying all the negative press is Blake's fault. But I'm like, what about the circulation? You know what I mean? Okay, this one I thought was a reach. Number 13 on page 11. Lively's marketing efforts, which included encouraging audiences to, quote, grab your friends, wear your florals, while promoting her hair care and alcohol brands, were widely criticized as insensitive. This was particularly glaring given World Health Organization statistics showing that 55% of domestic violence incidents involve alcohol. I'm like, that, these little moments in here, I'm like, okay, this is, again, with the, like, previously backed by Harvey Weinstein. It's like, you're just throwing in things. It makes me think of my AP Lang and Comp class where they're like, you need to use the three appeals, pathos, logos, and ethos to write this. And you need to get
your
credibility.
They're trying to create bias in people.
Exactly. And so, like, all these little things, I'm just like, I don't know. I think it's kind of a reach. And we get these text messages between the agency group talking about everything. And they're like, we didn't tell Jed, who was the, quote, loaded gun, whose job was to just, like, start shit online, to go after the idea that her promo was inappropriate. That happened organically because people saw the actual movie and were like, wait, this is a movie about domestic violence that they wear florals to. And then they screenshot a post from the Instagram account, It Ends With Us Movie, where the caption is, grab your friends, wear your florals. And they say, like, come on, we had nothing to do with that. And it's like, yeah, but it's Justin's movie.
Yeah. The Wayfarer Production
so
Company.
So I want to know who came up with the marketing plan, because they're kind
There's
of saying
a
in this
communication.
Yes, they're saying in this basically that, like, allegedly Blake and Sony agreed on this marketing plan, but it's alleged. We don't know. So I'm interested to see where that comes, because honestly, it's like, I think that matters.
Because did they talk about, because in Blake's complaint, they talked about the marketing and how he started going off script.
Mm-hmm.
Did they address that in his at all?
Yes, that's addressed. You'll see. Well, they say that he always wanted to be talking about the domestic violence and whatever, but it's like, but also referenced in the Times article and Lively suit, he was engaging in this, like, let me give you a tour of this floral shop. Let mm-hmm. me make you a, you know, it ends with us inspired latte, like whatever. Like he was doing that shit.
Right.
So it's like at some point he was on board for this, whether or not he was coerced, I don't really know. So interesting. Okay. Stephanie Jones is an important character that was not mentioned at all in Blake's suit. Stephanie Jones used to be Justin's PR rep, and she had, I think it's called Jones Works, was like her agency. So Jennifer Abel worked for Jones Works.
Okay.
Leaves Jones Works, and that is how all of her stuff got out.
Oh my God.
They subpoenaed Stephanie Jones.
That's a little messy.
Yes. They subpoenaed Stephanie Jones, and she gave everything. And when Jennifer Abel left Jones Works, she had to turn in all her electronics and everything. And so they took everything from that. And that is how they got everything. But Stephanie Jones is like conveniently not mentioned at all in Lively's thing. So they're saying like that's a major, major thing here.
I wonder if it's, I mean, I think that it's, that's unethical, but I wonder if it's illegal.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pissed. I had page numbers on here that I wanted to quote that are now redacted.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God, it's a bummer. Okay, yeah, so we have number 16 in the complaint. To assert that plaintiffs orchestrated a premeditated smear campaign is to disregard objective evidence that unequivocally contradicts such claims. Even a cursory investigation by the Times would have exposed the baseless nature of Lively's allegations and the lack of factual support for her narrative. Most troubling, however, is the Times' deliberate omission of a critical player in this manufacturer controversy, Stephanie Jones. Once Baldoni's and Wayfair's trusted public relations representative, Jones not only had intimate access to the communication strategy and crisis management surrounding the film, but also played a pivotal role in leaking private communications cited in the article. Her betrayal, driven by a quid pro quo agreement with Lively, appears aimed at shielding herself while aligning with Lively to curry favor and secure future opportunities. So that's what they think about that.
Mm.
They refute, so there was the moment where Blake talks about when Jamie Heath showed her the home birth video of his wife and whatever. And so they talk about that in here, and they say the Times compounded its journalistic failures by uncritically advancing Lively's unsubstantiated claims of sexual harassment against Heath and Baldoni. For example, the article, based on Lively's CRD complaint, sensationally alleges that Mr. Heath had shown Lively a video of his naked wife, with Lively's CRD complaint even labeling the footage as pornography. This claim is patently absurd. The video in question was a non-pornographic recording of Heath's wife and baby during a home birth, a deeply personal one with no sexual overtone. To distort this benign event into an act of sexual misconduct is outrageous and emblematic of the lengths to which Lively and her collaborators are willing to go to defame plaintiffs. So it shows a still the video here, okay? Here's where I'm like, what is the definition of pornography? Yes, I looked it up today. Because I was like, is it just a naked body or does it have to be sexual? Mm-hmm. So the definition does say like sexual overtones.
Right.
So I think this was more of just, again, semantics. We use the wrong word here. But I will say in this video, his wife is completely naked. He is naked in the bath with her and they're holding the baby in this video. But he showed, this is a still, you know, so what happened before the baby? It was probably his wife completely exposed. He showed it to Blake, according to Blake, without her consent. He just like showed it to her to prove to her that women give birth naked. And she was like, oh my God, don't fucking show me that.
Yeah.
And because she thought it was porn. And then he was like, oh my God, it's just a home birth, whatever. But like, that's what I'm saying. Like a lot of it is like he said, she said. Like it's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, I mean.
And it's like.
It's kind of how you interpret it. Like I would feel uncomfortable.
I think the word was wrong maybe, but as far as it being some form of sexual harassment, showing someone offhand a picture of yes. any naked person
is a little harassment. Bit jarring. Yeah, it is. Exactly. It's not appropriate, especially when you like in own the work, production company.
And the fact that it's in a, because think
about, he's not the director.
Let's also put this in corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you're true. Like working at a bank and your boss comes in and shows you
mm-hmm.
a video of his home birth. Like it's inappropriate.
Yes, I agree.
Especially to someone who has given birth before. Like it's not yes. like, She's never had
right. She knows what it looks like to give birth. And so then there's also a question for me about pumping versus breastfeeding. I'm not a mother. I don't really understand. But they're saying, you know, one of Blake's claims is that Baldoni and Heath would just come into her dressing room anytime when she was like naked or she was breastfeeding or whatever. And she didn't want that to happen anymore. And they're saying she invited them in. So there's a text exchange
where
she's like, I'm pumping in my dressing room if you want to come in and run lines. And he's like, I'll be there in a second. There's also a lot of this, which I wonder about, which is consent needs to be given every time. You know what I mean? And so it's like, I think there was a little bit of she invited them in when she was pumping and probably cover, you know, whatever. And then they just assumed from there on out that would always be okay. Maybe is what I'm guessing. Because it's like, okay, yeah, she invited them in. I'm also like, maybe she was like.
And it does seem like with his brand, it seems like he'd be the kind of guy who's like, are you still comfortable if I
exactly.
come in?
So that was something that came up. They're like, we're following her lead. They also say that about the sexy comment. So we've seen texts come out. Where she's texting, Blake is texting Justin and she's like showing him the outfit. And she's like, okay, we need to have on this hat. The hat is much sexier.
Blake.
No, it isn't.
And this is where you lose me.
Yeah.
Blake, nothing about the outfits in this movie that you have on are super sexy. And the beanie?
Yeah.
Really, you lost any chance of it being
her sexy. Text about it was hilarious and crazy. And he just like ignored it.
This is why I'm like, okay, I need to know how Taylor Swift and Blake Lively text. I want to know how Taylor and Blake text. I want to know how Selena and Taylor text.
I don't want to know about Blake and Taylor.
You think it's so mean?
I think it's so embarrassing.
Uh-oh.
Okay, wow. Well, so you're not team Blake anymore?
I think
it's so mean?
I think the texts between Selena and Taylor are embarrassing.
You're right, they are. They all are.
Oh my God, I can't wait to be the ring bearer at your wedding.
Flower girl.
Oh, right, sorry.
Anyway, okay. That was one thing that I thought was weird with the breastfeeding thing. I don't know, whatever. But then the sexy comment. So there was that. He is saying that her using the word sexier to describe this hat means that now that's verbiage we're using to describe her and the character and whatever throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
And because Blake used it, I can use it. I'm following her lead. That's what he's saying.
Okay.
And so later on, but I'm like, this was a different costume though. So it's like, and I don't even remember if it was a costume, but it was like a onesie scene and she had a coat on and he was like, take the coat off. It's way sexier without the coat or something. Or like she took off the coat and her lawsuit, it says she took off the coat and she had on like a lacy thing like for nursing basically. And he was like, oh, it looks sexy.
Which is why it makes me think that it wasn't a costume if she had the thing on for.
But then like this is saying it was and that he was just using the words that she had used to describe. But I'm like, it was describing a totally different costume.
And it also, I'm sorry, it is just semantics. It's like, okay, different people have different.
Exactly.
Like, and I'm not saying this, I don't know, this might come off the wrong way, but like if they had liked each other.
Yeah.
If they had gotten along, I don't think she would have had a problem with it.
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing. It's like, well, and also I'm going to say, I think there might be a lot of this that Ryan Reynolds had a problem with and that might not have been as much driven by Blake. Like I could see a world where Ryan Reynolds is like threatened by Justin Baldoni. He's so good looking. He's all that, you know, whatever. And then like, if it starts to look like he's disrespecting his wife, harassing her, hitting, you know, whatever, right. X, Y, and Z. I don't know. Okay. So then the intimacy thing, this is where I looked up at intimacy coordinator's role today because I think this is crucial. They are using this text where Justin's like, I just hired an intimacy coordinator love. Let me know when you can come meet with her for an intro. That's what he says, for an intro. He doesn't say so that we can block out all the sex scenes. It's for an intro. And Blake goes, I feel good. I'll meet her when we start. Okay. That is provided as like damning evidence that Blake didn't want to meet the intimacy coordinator. So how could she possibly like have opinions on it later on?
Yeah.
Here's what I want to say. My understanding of an intimacy coordinator is they're on set the whole time. They are on set during the intimate scenes. They don't plan out the scenes and then dip out. They're there to make sure things go according to plan and that everybody feels safe on set. There was not an intimacy coordinator on set. So
until she demanded one.
Yeah. And
when was that? Was the text sent in the break or was it?
No, it was before. It was before. So here's the deal. So there, I guess, was an intimacy coordinator that he hired to choreograph the scenes. But he said to Blake, like, this is where I'm like, what else is there? Like, I need the trial because I don't really know what is I'm missing here. Because it's like he said, let me know when you want to meet her for an intro. She said, I'm good. I'll meet her when we start. Probably thinking the intimacy coordinator would fucking be there when she got to the set. And then the intimacy coordinator wasn't there. And Justin was like, well, this is what me and the intimacy coordinator talked about for the sex scenes.
Oh.
And so it's like they're saying Blake thinks he added these things, or Blake thinks he was improvising, but they're things that he and the intimacy coordinator talked about, and Blake chose not to be there for those conversations.
Yeah.
I don't know about.
We need more information.
Because in my opinion, sure. I'm like, my guess is that she thought the intimacy coordinator would be there when they went there to do the scenes, and she would meet her there. She didn't feel like she needed to meet her ahead of time. He said it was an intro. He didn't say we're going to be like doing this, whatever. Then I guess he and Blake meet up to like talk about the scenes. And I guess the intimacy coordinator has suggested that there was a scene where after Lily orgasms, Ryle should choose not to. And Blake said, I would be mortified if that happened to me. And he said, well, I don't know about you, but those are some of the most beautiful moments between me and my partner. And that is the moment where Blake's suit says, he says, do you and Ryan orgasm simultaneously? So it's also a different story. I'm like, is he coming or not? You know what I mean? Like, that's not, I don't know. But I'm like, it does seem weird. Like, I feel like the intimacy coordinator was supposed to be there the whole time, and that's what she thought was going to happen. And then she gets to set and there's not one, because otherwise, I'm sorry, how do we do the birth scene where there's nothing to cover her up in between scenes and it's not a closed set and all these things? I think the intimacy coordinator was there. And so then when we get the list of demands, it's like, then one is there. So I don't think her not meeting the intimacy coordinator ahead of time is like,
it's not this gotcha moment. Seems to be the pattern in this, is that it doesn't seem like they thought that they had a gotcha moment for everything, and yes, I just need more information.
Well, and a lot of this is like, this whole suit makes me feel like they're saying, look, you know, they completely fabricated this idea of a smear campaign. That is not proven to me in this suit. No. What's proven to me in this suit is that maybe they didn't have to pull out all the stops that they initially planned.
But they were ready to.
But they had a plan that didn't come out of thin air. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He hired them proactively because he was scared when Ryan Reynolds blocked him. And when Blake brought these claims, you know, he was scared they were going to come out because of how hostile things ended up getting, which I can understand. But one of my biggest qualms with this is like, if you're Justin Baldoni and your whole brand is built on, I'm a feminist, I'm a girl's guy, I'm all these things, why are you hiring Melissa Nathan, who is, her claim to fame is what she did to Amber Heard during the Johnny Depp trial?
And I'm already seeing comments saying that they want him to hire, what was Johnny Depp's lawyer's name?
Oh, God, not Camille? Camille, whatever.
Vasquez or something?
Yeah. I'm like, okay, do that then. If that's... But then that needs to be your new narrative then, like, you know, because I just don't think, I don't know, I think it's an interesting choice to hire those people in the midst of this, and the movie that you're doing about domestic violence, you're gonna hire Johnny Depp's team,
and to not do what you are quoted in those TED talks to say that you want men to do, which is, okay, I'm not saying all of the stuff that Blake is saying you did is the end of the world,
right?
But if you are the man enough guy, hearing that that's how someone experienced working for you and with you,
mm-hmm,
it just seems like you would have had a different way of handling it than you have.
Yes,
it doesn't seem to really match with the persona.
So there's a number 23 here where it says, crucially, Lively concedes that neither Baldoni nor Heath engaged in any harassing behavior following the agreement in November 2023 when she brought her demands. Okay, after that was fine. Furthermore, she admits that her stated concerns were sufficiently addressed at that time. This admission directly undermines her allegations of retaliation and strips her claims of credibility. Without the fabricated smear campaign narrative propping up her CRD complaint, Lively's retaliation claim collapses under its own contradictions, exposing it as yet another ploy to salvage her public image rather than pursue any legitimate grievance. I don't know about this, because I think they're like saying that, okay, so there was no retaliation. She came in with a thing. She said everything was addressed. I think what she's saying is the retaliation was hiring the people for the smear campaign.
Right.
That's the retaliation that she's talking about here. And that's why she did this, you know? So mm-hmm. It's like, I don't think the retaliation is, she's saying on set, they were retaliating against me, whatever. they're retaliating because they got scared that all this was going to come out and they didn't want it to. And they were trying to be proactive about it. Mm-hmm. And that's why she's doing this. So that's where I'm just like, I don't think that this proves that there's a fabricated smear campaign here. I think that there was one. I just don't think you like that it's called a smear campaign.
Right.
But that's what was going to happen here. And it doesn't explain all those texts. We can bury anyone. I can't put in writing what that we're going to bury here. Like those things weren't explained away from me in this at all. So, there's that. Okay, so then we have the source of the actual tension, and that's number 26. And it says, the Times' assertion that plaintiffs orchestrated a campaign to tarnish Lively's reputation blatantly disregards her bizarre behavior at the time and misrepresents plaintiffs' actions, which were modest, transparent, and purely defensive. The article entirely sidesteps the real source of conflict between Lively and plaintiffs, Lively's calculated and audacious attempt to seize control of the film. So now that is what they're saying, that this whole proactive thing was started because of her hostile takeover of this film, which we're going to get into now. Justin Baldoni saying things like, she's kicked me out officially of the film now. She's finishing it all. I can't be involved. Music, sound, voice effects, everything. I'll make it through somehow. Just need to feel it all. And this whole thing about how she's taking the movie. He apparently always wanted it to be about domestic violence. The movie obviously is, but the marketing scheme. And they say that Blake, quote, drastically limited his input and deliberately steered the promotional campaign away from its societal message. So this, I'm like, I guess she did, but that is what the marketing plan said to do. So I'm like,
where did that come from?
A little bit confused about that.
Like, did the marketing plan, are they saying that the marketing plan came from Blake, or was Blake just following what Sony was saying?
So I'll read it. Moreover, the article fails to address the fact that Baldoni was systematically sidelined from the marketing of his own film. From the very beginning, Baldoni had insisted on marketing the film with a focus on domestic violence and its survivors, a message that was integral to the film's purpose. Yet Lively drastically limited his input and deliberately steered the promotional campaign away from its societal message. Further undermining Baldoni's role, Lively initially refused to permit his attendance at the film's premiere. Only after significant pressure did she reluctantly agree to allow Baldoni and the Wayfarer team to attend, but under humiliating conditions. The Wayfarer team and their families, including Baldoni and Heath, were segregated from the main cast, barred from the exclusive after party, and forced to organize their own event at additional cost. Baldoni's participation on the red carpet was cut short, and his family and friends were confined to a makeshift holding area in the basement before being escorted into a separate theater after Lively's departure. Not only had Lively stolen the film, but she also robbed Baldoni and his team of any genuine opportunity to celebrate their hard work. So here's where it starts getting a little dicey for me, because
that's tough.
Blake, at this point, like, what they're saying is she was like, you can't come, you can't be involved, you have to wait in this like basement holding room, apparently, where they're like folding chairs and like snack boxes around them and whatever. And I want to know why, is my thing. I'm not going to be so quick to jump. Like, I think if this whole thing has taught us anything, it's that we cannot be so quick to jump on a side, because we do not fucking know, and we're not going to
know. My favorite comment I've seen has been, as a society, we're going to take the side of the person who last talked.
Yes. And that is what it's feeling like right now.
Because it really feels like the tide has gone completely back over. For most people, back over to Justin.
Yes.
Except for people who felt vindicated by the Blake suit.
Exactly. And so it's tough because, yes, this is his movie and like all this stuff. But what I'm curious about, because we get in, let me keep going, because there's a bunch about like how it's her cut and her edit. And I'm like, they did test them, and they're saying that Justin's cut of the movie tested way better with audiences, but that everyone still went with Blake's. And I'm like, okay, but I need proof for that.
Exactly.
Because why would the distributor go with Blake's copy if it didn't do as well? And I also want to know, why did Blake feel like she needed to make a copy? These are the questions
I'm asking.
Didn't
they say, I think this came out when we did our Patreon episode. I think we already had information on this. I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that his cut was a little bit more graphic. I think it depicted the domestic violence differently.
Oh.
In the way that, like, what the scenes, that the way that everything was edited together. And I think Blake's was more, which I think is why Colleen Hoover ended up, because it's not like Sony and Blake were like, we're going with this cut.
Right, right.
Colleen Hoover also signed off on that being the cut. And I think that she liked that it didn't really like, it wasn't like you were watching Ryle like do the stuff.
That's something that we were talking about with Woman of the Hour.
Yeah.
How it was like,
it made it more impactful.
You can tell that a woman directed this because we didn't get any rape scenes. Mm-hmm. Like we were aware it had happened.
And we didn't even really see like,
that's what it is. Like they didn't need to show it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like distorted or blurred or was the after, you know, or whatever. And it was like, Anna Kendrick was talking about making the movie and she was like, it was one of those moments where I realized like, oh, it is important to have a female director because
I really liked what she said. She was like, everybody kept telling me how great it is that I'm directing this and that I'm a woman. Like, and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Is it really that different?
Right. And it was in moments like that or in the parking lot scene, you know, things like that, where she was like, oh, this is why it matters. And so I will stick to my initial take, which is that Justin Baldoni never should have directed this movie, you know? And like, I know that he read the book and felt so taken by it and worked on it for 5 years, but to be honest, I think it's weird.
Be like, an executive producer.
Have your
production company hire a female director. You don't need to
have the whole thing. Okay, so we have a pretty clear thesis of his lawsuit here. I'm going to read this.
Okay.
When Wayfarer and Baldoni hired Lively to appear in the film, they did not anticipate that she would execute a hostile takeover of the entire project. Lively's cynical abuse of sexual harassment allegations to assert unilateral control over every aspect of the production was both strategic and manipulative. Simultaneously, her public image suffered a result of a series of high-profile blunders, which she tried to deflect by blaming plaintiffs for the public's prying interest into the foibles of an A-list celebrity. This is nothing but an excuse. Fame is a double-edged sword, but Lively's tactics here are unconscionable. Alongside the Times, she orchestrated a malicious attack on the reputations, careers, and personal lives of plaintiffs, subjecting them to public humiliation, threats, and vitriol. This lawsuit seeks to hold the Times accountable for its role in this defamation campaign, but plaintiffs are not done. There are other bad actors involved, and make no mistake, this will not be the last lawsuit.
Jesus Christ.
I know.
So, sometimes when I read lawsuits and stuff, I'm like, wait.
Okay, a little dramatic.
Lawyers are feisty.
I know. I'm like, okay, sir. What a serve.
Okay, wait, I should have been a lawyer.
There are other bad actors involved, and make no mistake, this will not be the last lawsuit.
I have a couple thoughts.
Okay.
One is, and obviously, false accusations are wrong and they shouldn't happen and it can destroy lives. But I think that it's very interesting, the tonal shift coming from someone like Justin Baldoni to now use the language that so many people use against women who come forward about weaponizing sexual assault.
It is interesting.
I think it puts a really bad taste in my mouth. And also I had another thought. I can't remember. I don't know. That was my main takeaway. But I just think that it's like, it just doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a bad look to me.
Yeah.
And it feels like a really big shift in energy.
I agree.
It feels like a witch hunt. And you know what they say? The women were hunting witches too.
Wenches.
and you know what they really say? They're burning all the wishes, even if you aren't one.
Well, speaking of our girl Tay, I'm like, I know this was written by Swifty because we have a death threat here that was sent to Melissa Nathan that you absolutely have to hear. And I know this was written by Swifty.
Which is so funny when I think it was Blake's lawsuit when there were the texts that
like,
were like, we have to weaponize the Swifties.
We need to remember the Swifties are on Blake's side, not ours. So we need to be fucking careful. Okay, so here's what we got. Dear Tag PR, this is a message from Melissa Nathan who said, quote, we can bury anyone. Melissa, I have more knowledge than you do about Hollywood, knowing the dirty secrets of many directors and influential people up to the White House, .. Another .. Because I am clothed in black. Some of the directors may know what that means. Before you go attacking good people like Blake Lively, be sure of this. There are no secrets those of us clothed in the darkest black of night do not know. .. And one day we will share those secrets in a forced public press meeting to the whole world in a foreign country with the help of technology you have no understanding of. In that day, the corrupt in Hollywood will realize all of their codes, cues, keys, and triggers in their films will fall back on their own heads, and all their vile acts against children will throw them into darkness. Do not play with Blake Lively.
Okay,
all caps, time, lowercase is all caps hours dot 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 lowercase as is the caps night. Time is ours, as is the night. We are above every government on earth and even NASA. So next time you want to crush someone like Blake Lively, think again. We work in ways you will never perceive.
My part of me,
imagine like, getting that email.
Part of me is like, Melissa Nathan wasn't even threatened by that. She was just like, everyone needs to hear this.
She was like, this is iconic. I mean, I'm sorry, that's the who wrote that?
Don't.
Which one of you?
Blake Lively and Taylor behind the keyboard.
Taylor Swift. Don't. Travis wrote it. He's like, don't worry, babe.
He's like, wait, I got this.
Handled.
I took creative writing in college. So, and I actually just got my degree.
Do
so.
Not play. Mess with Blake Lively.
Travis Kelce, do not play with
literally
Blake Lively.
Someone who loves wait, Gossip speaking Girl. Of which, like, who is this?
Just a little segue real quick. What do Travis Kelce, Jack Antonoff, and Margaret Qualley talk about at dinner?
Would love to know. The substance.
Because when
Travis, like, it's my favorite
wait,
movie.
I saw it was really that ending scene was something.
It was crazy. It was that was crazy.
I thought the costumes were really good.
Okay, so moving on. Gonna hope to fit. Oh my god, this is so funny. Okay, so
well,
then
nothing's gonna beat that.
No, I know nothing will beat that.
But time is ours, as is the night.
Okay,
in ways you cannot perceive.
This one's great. Ignoring the director's vision for her character and disregarding the weeks spent by the entire team shopping and thoughtfully crafting her wardrobe in preparation for filming, Lively would send hundreds of images to the film's costume designer during all hours of the evening, pointing them in the direction of the appearance she wanted for her character.
Okay, Caroline vibes. All hours of the evening.
The costume designer then had to reshop her wardrobe, far exceeding the allocated budget and diverting time and resources. But it does say at another place that Blake paid for it. So, okay. At one point.
Okay. I'm not trying to say that the costume person shouldn't have been a little bit offended, but like if I'm the costume person and Blake Lively comes in and is like, I will pay. We're just going to have fun. This. We're just going to like do, we're going to brainstorm together. I'd be like, okay, slay.
This is so funny, Phoebe. At one point, Lively insisted that her character, quote, had money and could afford $5,000 shoes, which had Baldoni rethinking the entire script that had been being worked on for well over a year and had been approved by both studios. She said that and had him rethinking everything.
He's like, wait, maybe.
But I'm also like,
maybe she's right.
Literally, like, I'm sorry. She said my character has money. And he was like, holy shit, we had to change everything. But I think we all thought that. We were like, yeah, she has a flower shop and like this gorgeous building and no one comes in and she makes no money and none of the flowers are real. Of course she has money.
But I am a little bit like, Blake, were the $5,000 shoes that important?
I think they were hers. That she already had those. So it's not like they bought them.
And also, I know that there's some people that like watch movies and they're like looking at what everybody's wearing, but like most people aren't going to be like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, people in movies are wearing $5,000 pairs of shoes and they can afford them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a big deal. Exactly. You don't have to rethink the entire movie.
Mm-hmm. So then there are more things about how Lively was difficult. She wouldn't go to wardrobe fittings. She wanted them to send it to her house. She like blah, 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 blah.
I get it.
I got it.
I don't want to try clothes on in front of you.
Here is the description of the crying in her dressing room about how fat and ugly and old she was. Here's what
great.
He says.
Never forget. And that, guys, that would send me into a spiral. I would probably file a complaint too.
Okay, so it says, in an effort to maintain harmony at the start of their working relationship and to avoid further delays caused by wardrobe conflicts, Baldoni and the studio reluctantly allowed Lively full control over her wardrobe. This concession quickly proved regrettable. On the first day of principal photography, paparazzi captured and published photos of Lively in character wearing her self-selected wardrobe. These images were described as unflattering and sparked a backlash from the film's distributor, Sony. Baldoni received direct criticism from Sony, who voiced concerns about the impact of the photos on the film's public perception. Following these events, Baldoni approached Lively in her trailer to discuss necessary wardrobe adjustments. The conversation, while professional, took considerable time and was later grossly misrepresented in Lively's CRD complaint, falsely characterizing the exchange as a lengthy outburst that delayed filming and caused the crew to wait for hours while Baldoni cried in Lively's dressing room. Although Baldoni did briefly tear up during the conversation, it was in response to what he believed was a genuine compliment from Lively, praising his work as a director and actor. In hindsight, Baldoni recognized this as a manipulation tactic, likely intended to persuade him to continue allowing her unchecked control over wardrobe decisions. I'm like, I don't know. I mean,
that situation is the least of your worries, Justin.
I know. I'm just like, but also the cry. I don't
He's
know.
Like, okay, First of all, I wasn't crying.
I wasn't crying. I briefly teared up because I was moved.
It's because she literally told me that I'm the best director ever.
Exactly. Wait until you hear. There are some like things where I'm just like, okay, but you are a dick. Some of the stuff that he says in here. So he's also like really paranoid in all these texts. He's like, I'm worried that they're going to think this is us. I'm worried they're going to think this is us about every bad thing.
Imagine how annoyed the PR people were.
But they were obviously annoyed. But I'm also like, why are you so paranoid? Unless you guys are doing this, mm-hmm. and you're doing some of it, and you're like, wait, shit, it's so big, people are gonna notice. It's like, I think the paranoia was a little bit intense. We find out she did try to quit, and mom was like, I don't know, I shouldn't just quit. And we find out she did try to quit, but then they were like, she was like, you can either recast me or I'm quitting. And they were like, well, we're not gonna recast you, so we'll just whatever. But here's the other thing. All of her stuff is like, they did let her do it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I know she like had this hostile takeover, but how hostile was it if you all just let her? You know, like you were just like, okay, and to everything.
Something that I just don't buy in the way that everybody else seems to buy into is this idea that like Ryan and her are this like everybody is like moving. It's like when Regina George walks down the hall and everybody moves out of her way. Like, I just don't know if I fully buy into that idea that everybody in Hollywood is just terrified of Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively.
That is what they are basing like this whole thing on, is that everyone's just so scared of them.
Like, I don't think that's why the cast is siding with her.
That's the thing. And now the crew is like, no, we like Justin. And I'm like, well, that's also
classic.
But like crew people like hate actors. So like, that's not really surprising to me either. So they're calling Blake a gaslighter. They're saying there were these script changes that she made and that were so like ridiculous. And I'm like, show them. That's the other thing. Her complaint had receipts. This one has like receipts, but not to the same level. Like, I need receipts that aren't in here.
Receipts proof, timeline, fucking everything is what we need.
That's what I need. So then this meeting that we were talking about, where she brings in her list of demands and she's like, this is what I need. That meeting wasn't like official, I guess. It happened at her house and she could bring a representative and she chose her husband. And apparently Reynolds like berated Justin Baldoni, like fucking flipped at him. And I guess a Sony rep has said,
hot.
A Sony representative has said she frequently thinks back on it and regrets not stopping Reynolds from like being so mean to Baldoni.
Mm.
Whether or not it's true, who knows? But mom was like, well, it's his wife. It was like, I mean, there is a world where it's like, if you're Blake's husband and you think that this man is sexually harassing your wife and calling her fat and ugly, and she just and got she COVID with her infant, and she has mastitis, and she has like all these things going on.
Oh yeah, I forgot all that stuff.
Yeah.
Where are the receipts saying that that shit didn't happen?
Like, she's coming home and telling him all this. Of course he's gonna fucking hate you. And like rewriting the rooftop scene, like, well, let me see both versions. You know, I want to see it. And I think in the trial we might get to, because I'm like, and
I want it taped.
I'm sure it will be covered. But I'm like, why though? Did it need to be rewritten?
Yeah.
I want to see the original.
If you're so sure that the public is going to ultimately side with you, then you shouldn't give us everything.
Right. Exactly. So this was crazy. So Blake basically does this whole cut. She like commandeers the whole thing. She turns it into her own movie. She hires her own editor, all this stuff, whatever, which like pisses everybody off. Everyone's really pissed off about it. She then is like, okay, I'm a producer and I want the PGA mark. It's like the Producers Guild of America, I think, which is like a very coveted mark. And you have to prove that you like did the stuff to get that mark.
Mm-hmm.
So she writes to Heath and Baldoni and is like, I need you guys to send an email to the Producers Guild of America or whatever and tell them that I should have this mark, which like I think is what you have to get like a recommendation. So they were like, no. They were like, we don't think you deserve it. We think this is fucked up of you, honestly. No. So apparently a rep for Blake told Justin Baldoni, any goodwill between us is done. Again, receipts, please. This is all in quotes.
Because if that had happened in the... I believe that if that had been reversed, we would have had the receipts.
If it was just a normal conversation, that's the thing, is a lot of the things that they're talking about in this are conversations recounted by two different people.
Right.
Different
ways. They're not texted.
So I'm like, I don't fucking know if any, like, we just don't. And there's so much that is texted, but even that they're trying to like muddy the waters with the emojis and it's all sarcastic. And like, I don't know. It's such a like he said, she said kind of thing. And they're like, oh, well, the Times and Blake are cherry picking what they want to include. And so are they. So it's we're all doing that. That's what this is. That's the game. Like, that's what we're doing. So they end up writing the email. okay, recommending her for this PGA mark. But before they did this, they send an email to their lawyers explaining that they'd sent it under duress in case they ever needed to explain why they recommended her for this.
Icky, icky.
It's crazy because they're like,
sorry, if you are thinking that way, things are not good.
Well, but I don't know because like...
For either party. I'm saying like if you are in an environment where you're doing something and you're thinking later down the line, I might have to cover
for
this.
Yeah, that's actually, yeah.
It's like something's wrong.
Well, because they were like, we don't want people later to be like, well, you wrote this like thing recommending her for this award or this whatever. And like now you're saying... So this is the email that he sent that was like explaining it. Hi, everyone. I'm writing to you all regarding a letter that I wrote on behalf of Justin and myself addressed to the Producers Guild. As you know, we received a request to write a recommendation on behalf of Blake for her to receive the PGA mark. This was a request that we feel was unreasonable and cold-hearted. Essentially, the movie It Ends With Us has been unjustly taken from Justin as a director and essentially from Wayfarer's control due to the extortion of Blake. Without going into all the details of the events that have transpired over the months, Justin and I ended up agreeing to write the letter due to feeling trapped. She continues to hold a threat over our heads, and every time we try and hold a line, she uses that threat, either directly or indirectly, to get us to fold. Like, what threat?
Yeah.
Make no mistake, I'm not suggesting that we were literally forced to acquiesce, but given the high profile of the movie, the partnership with Sony, the amount of money invested, and the need to complete the movie, we have written the letter on her behalf, omitting the truth of how and why she was able to contribute in the ways we listed. There is nothing to do with the letter now. It only serves as a way to memorialize why the letter was sent in the first place should we ever need to explain it. Thank you. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
So, you know, they don't, but I'm also like, again, I'm like, so much of this could be like, yes, she took it, but you're also mad. So that's why you don't want to give it to her. You know, like, why is it cold hearted that she thinks she should get the mark? They don't think she did what she needs to do. But then you're also saying she edited the entire movie and like paid her a bunch of stuff and did all the stuff for the movie. So I'm like, then how did she not do what she needed to do? So I need to see the rubric and I need to see all that too. Okay, thank you. Moving on. I, again, want to know why we didn't get Justin's cut. Why not? Why not? You know, tell me why. Show me them both. I want to see. Then he was mad that Blake said that he shouldn't be in any artwork for the film. Why would you be in it?
You're the abuser.
Why the fuck should you be in the giant posters for the movie? And didn't you say, hadn't you seen something that it was like he chose like not to, like he was like, I stepped away.
Well, yeah,
because I don't feel like the abuser should be
he
there.
Had talked about that. And that's what a lot of people were pointing. That's, I think, part of the explanation for why at first, when we were still under the guise that things could potentially be okay,
mm-hmm.
there was an idea that he didn't want to be photographed with Blake or with the cast because he was the abuser.
Yes. So there's,
and that's why I also think he didn't do any press like interviews with the whole cast.
Well, that's what it was like seeming to be, but now it seems no, it seems it's because Blake didn't want him there. But I'm like, again, there's a part of me that's like, if Blake's truth really is her truth and she felt unsafe around you and didn't want you there,
right?
Like that might be it. I don't know. Like we do not know.
I want more information on the holding room.
I do too. But I also really want, well, he admits here, he did call her trainer to find out how much she weighs because he has bulging discs and he was worried he wouldn't be able to do it.
I remember that. We already knew that though.
Yeah. But I'm like, okay. But again,
what about the doctor?
If I'm Blake, and I hear that you asked my fucking trainer who I gave you how much I weigh, and my trainer told you?
Like, okay, new trainer.
New trainer. But
and by
I
the
would,
way, that's a lie.
I would be. By the way, I weigh 50 pounds less than that. So I would be livid, though, like about that. And it doesn't matter if it's reasonable for you, Justin. I would be like, how fucking dare you? You can ask me instead of being sneaky and asking my fucking trainer. Or you can like say.
And by the way, don't recommend a doctor to me that specializes in weight loss.
Exactly.
I want more information on that too.
Me too. So the funniest fucking thing, and like what I think, I just feel like this sounds like so nasty and like evil. And it's about Colleen Hoover. So hang on one second. Well, this is the other thing. Baldoni's dated handwritten notes from his meetings with the intimacy coordinator, which again, Lively declined attending, were read to Lively at her penthouse. And I'm like, your dated handwritten notes mean nothing to me. Show me an email from the intimacy coordinator saying this is what we should, like, I don't know. I'm just like, I don't fucking know. Anyway, where is the fucking thing that he said about Colleen Hoover? They're also saying that like her list of demands wasn't actually sent to them, But they agreed to it.
Right.
And they even said that they were essential. So I don't really get that super much.
That doesn't make sense.
1 second while I find this. He didn't get his like protected period of the director's cut. The Directors Guild of America mandates a 10-week protected period during which the director of a feature film is entitled to privately edit the film and assemble their director's cut. This period is considered sacred, providing the director with uninterrupted time to creatively shape the final product. He didn't get it because Lively requested to join him. Say no. Like, again, I'm just like, I know you're like scared of her, but all this is like, we're just so scared of her. We're going to do whatever she wants. Why are you so scared? Mm-hmm. I don't know why you're so scared. Maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah. If there's a threat, tell us.
What is the actual threat? Can somebody tell me that? Because I don't.
And does it make you look worse? Is the threat, I'll do, if you don't do this, I'm going to tell everybody that you did this.
Right.
Which
exactly.
is still wrong. That's extortion. But I am, it is like, why won't you just tell us how they threatened you?
What's also interesting is they're like, this whole suit, it's against the New York Times, but they're just talking about how Blake like bullied them. Like it's all about Blake. So it's like they're doing what they did, what she did with the legal complaint,
but
initially.
But they won $250 million.
From New York Times. But I guess they're going to be suing Blake for something. I'm not really sure. Who knows? But they just are saying, in spite of Sloan's efforts to lambast Baldoni and Nathan. Sorry. Oh, my God. How crazy that Leslie Sloan is her name.
Oh, my God.
It was Lively who ultimately stirred up her own public ridicule, which might be true. But then it was like brought up, I don't know. I really do want to know who came up with the marketing plan. That would really clear up a lot for me.
Mm-hmm.
Where can I fucking find this thing about what he said about Colleen Hoover? It's so fucking funny. In like evil. They also include in here the thing about Ryan Reynolds and Blake like pressuring William Morris to drop him without adding that William Morris has since said that's not true. Okay, well, basically, he said something about Hoover unfollowing him was, like, really, really mean and, like, hurt his feelings and made him mad because it says about Hoover and for whom Baldoni created this opportunity. She wrote the book.
And it was, like, I'm not a Colleen Hoover girl. I don't love her. I think she's problematic, and I don't love her books. But it was, like, the biggest book in America for years.
How are you going to say that Baldoni created this opportunity for her? And so it was fucked up that she unfollowed him on Instagram. Like, it's her book.
This, and I bet you a lot of studios would have bought the rights to the book.
Yes. I guarantee they would have. He just is the one who did. But I'm like, I just thought it was crazy that, like, he said that. I was like, that's so fucked up. And they keep being like, he wanted to move on. I'm like, then why did he hire the team?
Mm-hmm.
My other question is,
because this could have been done in August,
because like he did hire this team, I guess like the first week of August or the last week of July, right before the premiere when all this
right.
was happening.
Yeah.
So like maybe she fucking figured out that he hired this team and was like, I don't want you anywhere near me at this premiere. Like we just don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
He does say that he was left in the dark on the marketing plan and that it was allegedly created by Sony and Lively. Would love to figure that out.
And I'm also confused because if you were left in the dark on the marketing campaign, why were you going to flower shops? Why were you doing lattes?
Yeah.
Why were you seemingly following the marketing plan?
Yes.
And then there was a shift.
Apparently he was like, no, Blake, you can't kick me out of the premiere. Like I'm going to come anyway. And then the entire cast refused to go if he did. And so he didn't. Or like he did, but he like was separate. And I'm like, again, is it because they're all terrified of Blake?
I just don't
Why
know.
Why did they all refuse to go? And they're denying that there was any astroturfing, which is the phrase for like what Melissa Nathan's job is, which is to just basically use social media just as a smear campaign. That's called astroturfing. And they deny that ever happened. And I'm like, but were you prepared to do it? Did you not do anything?
And you were hiring those people.
So it's really like, honestly, that's all that I got from this. I read it twice because I was like, I want to give an equitable representation of like both sides. Like, I don't want to be like Blake, like whatever. I don't want to do that because I don't know who's right.
And we don't really love Blake.
But I think the truth.
Especially if some of this stuff is true.
And
about
I don't
Blake.
Know Justin Baldoni at all. Like, I've never watched Jane the Virgin. He's not so. I only know him from this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all I know him from.
I know him from that annoying ass interview he did with Shawn Mendes.
Oh, my God.
He's got the Shawn Mendes disease. They both do.
Oh, yes.
Of like talking like this.
Well, that's it. It's like.
And crying.
This sensitive man. And he's
Which
so
is fine.
In touch. And he's all these things. And it's like, There's so many things where, like, I can't reconcile who everyone wants me to think Justin Baldoni is with who this person
is. And it's also like, okay, can we just find a way for men to be normal, just in the middle? You don't, to go all the way to the feminist side, you don't have to grow your hair out long and put it in a man bun and have a podcast called Man Enough where you cry with Shawn Mendes for 2 hours.
Now, do I have to be suspicious of every man who, like,
is that way?
Is that way? Like, that's a bummer, you know? And it's like, we need men like this. And just maybe, like, this is an opportunity for both parties to look in the mirror and, like, change things about themselves. Yeah. Like, I honestly think they both did things wrong here. Mm-hmm. And I think, unfortunately, like, I hate to say this to you, Justin Baldoni, I know you're listening. I think you let her have a lot of this power. Like, I think you own the production company. You're an executive producer. You are the lead actor and you are the director. And you played the abuser. But you also, like, could have just said no. And if she wanted to quit and break her contract and all these things, then, like, if the movie meant as much to you as you're saying it did, maybe that would have been fine.
And also just be the guy you say you are and take some accountability. Mm-hmm. A lot of it just sounds like when a guy gets in trouble and he's like, well, this and this. And it's like, just say you're sorry.
And it's like,
and this would be over.
The question is, do we feel that way because it's what we read second? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. The other thing is, like, you know, the Times reached out to Justin's team.
Didn't give him enough time to,
like,
answer, right?
11 p.m. on a Friday. And they're like, this is going live at noon. Like, get us anything you want. And they did. I don't know. I mean, I think there are a lot of things. The Times is going to go to court.
They've doubled down, right?
So they had said that Blake hadn't filed, like, an actual suit. But then on New Year's Eve, she did. So now, like, she has, because they were like, she just said this for her reputation, which I'm like, even if she did, that would make sense to me. Mm-hmm. But now she's on the full thing, so she wants the legal action. I don't know what she's, like, suing
and for. I think that's another thing, people think she's doing this for attention. The two times she's done what she's done,
I've heard her say nothing about it.
It's been on two meet, like, that, you know, that PR girl on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
When the first one came out, she was like, isn't it interesting that the Friday before Christmas is when she does it, when nobody's watching the news.
Mm-hmm.
You're going into a holiday weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's really paying attention. She does it. So that is like, she was like in our industry of, like, PR and everything. We know that if we want a story to get legs, we're not putting it out on that day.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we want it to
be quiet. I did think that it was like a Saturday at noon.
And then on New Year's Eve, nobody's like, what's Blake Lively doing? And it's not like he was doing it on, in my opinion, like an attention grabbing day. But I just think the narrative that Blake Lively is this attention whore who, like, wants everybody to take her side doesn't really fit, because she tried to do these things quietly.
Yeah.
And it's not like she, like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, she didn't, like, ask the Times to do what they to
no,
do
I think
the
she
article.
Did.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure that, like, she gave it to the Times and was like, here you go.
Okay.
Like, I think that's happened. But I don't know that makes her a bad person.
I agree.
You know, and it's the world we live in. It is the climate that she lives in.
And she's sounding the alarms. We just said this, but, like, for these guys who seem like safe people.
Yeah.
And again, we don't know. I'm just saying, if what she's saying is true, she's sounding the alarm, I think, in the post Me Too world to say, we don't just have to look for the Harvey Weinsteins.
Yes.
And I'm, again, not comparing what he did to Harvey Weinstein, but I'm just saying there, it's just because we're in the post Me Too era doesn't mean that Hollywood is a safe place for women.
No.
And it doesn't mean that sets like Justin Baldoni's are necessarily perfect.
And just because you are, I think there's also a certain, like, attitude where it's like, well, I'm working with this guy who is such a feminist and he's so, like, committed to all these things.
In this book about domestic violence really moved him.
Right. And the authors involved, and, you know, all these things, that you just assume it's going to be a certain way.
Right.
Like, I honestly feel like she probably did feel really good going into it and felt like it was, and then it wasn't what she thought it was going to be because they didn't put all those protections in place just because of who he is. And he's like, well, that work, you know, on sets where, like, it's a casting couch situation, but that's not me. And it's like, well, one of his quotes in Blake Lively's complaint is, men need to realize when they've made women uncomfortable without realizing it.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of this is. And I wonder, you know, I'm like, Justin, is there a world where if you had never hired Melissa Nathan and the agency group,
this would never have happened. I agree. I also, here's another thing I want more information on from Justin's camp, if he has it. The conversation that they had in the taxi, or the, yeah. in the car. Like, that to me is damning.
Yes.
The fact that her driver wouldn't let him yeah. let her be alone with him.
There like, are a lot of things like, that are not addressed in this.
And that's what's interesting to me, is that it does shift the attention in a way where you're if you're reading Justin's suit, you're forgetting some of the things that really stood out yes. to you when you read Blake's suit. And now you're like, wait, well, it was Blake being ridiculous mm-hmm. and my own Justin's side. And it's not giving me the full scope.
No. And I'll say a couple other things. Like, Justin has some texts in his complaint that show that he's talking about, you know, he's sending videos of people talking about domestic violence and all these things in response to the movie. And he's sending it to everyone. And he's like, this was like the point. This is what we wanted. Like, we just need to celebrate this. And it's like, okay, the movie that went out got those responses yeah. and you weren't happy with that movie and mm-hmm. it wasn't your cut and it wasn't X, Y, and Z, but it still did what you wanted it to do. And at the end of the day,
exactly,
you're still the director. Like, I know that, like, Blake, maybe you feel directed more of it, but you're listed but as also, the director. Like,
remember, she it might be her edit, but you were the person that directed yes. those shots
and
that
you're
she
also
picked
in
from
it. You know, like exactly. you're in it. And
I really do think you're exactly right. I think that this all could have been forgotten
yes.
in August.
I think if he just never hired them, because I think in his text, the main thing that sticks out to me from him is the paranoia that, like, even if he didn't do anything, that he's like, she doesn't like me and I'm afraid she's going to do right. something with this. And it's like that. Yeah, I mean, who knows, though, if she would have. We don't know. You yeah. didn't give her the chance to...
not do that.
Do it or not do it. And they're like, well, look, it's exactly what we thought would happen. Like, we thought she'd come forward, and she did. And it's like, she did after you hired Melissa Nathan. I'm sorry, if I know who that is and I hear that you hired them against me, mm-hmm. I'm scared as fuck now.
Right.
Like, look what she's capable of. She's great at her fucking job, you know? And this new, like, PR social media warfare, I just think this opens up a lot of questions about how we interpret things. I hope it gives, as I said in the last episode, like, I hope it gives everyone some discretion when they're looking at, like, the media and what's being fed to us. But the truth is, like, we are not going to know whatever happened on that fucking set. Maybe during the trial we will learn. I'm looking forward to it. I think at the end of the day, this is a case of two people who do not work well together, who both have massive egos and let mm-hmm. that get in the way of what's
absolutely.
Going on here. They both, and I don't even know that those egos were like, well, I know how this movie should be made if it's going to affect people the right way. Like, I don't even think it was, like, misplaced. It mm-hmm. was just like, they just have egos, which is okay. You're Hollywood A-list actors. You should have egos. Like, right. of course you do, you know? But then I think there's a world where it's like, and Ryan Reynolds is hearing all this. Blake's coming home from work and venting about this, and he's getting an idea, and he's fucking angry at Baldoni when he sees him and yells at him. And I think there's a world where Blake no longer felt safe around him after just everything, you know? And, like, they just don't understand each other, and he didn't like her and she didn't like him, and they were both scared of what the other person would do. And they were like, but I just think so much of these lawsuits are he said, she said. And I think a lot of the things that made me raise my eyebrows and drop my jaw and Blake's complaint were not addressed in this one. And a lot of things were addressed. You know, we get the whole dressing room thing. We get the whole, like, pornography video thing. We get the sex scene things, but we're not getting the, what about the Young Lily sex scene where he said that thing and the Young Lily went and told Blake Lively, so she included it. There are a lot of things that we're not seeing here that I think matter.
And what about Jenny Slate said? Well, we don't know
exactly.
that it was Jenny Slate, but the unnamed actress.
Yes.
And
all these people who have come out post Blake, I'm wondering if we're going to see people coming out post Justin, you know, retracting their statements on, because it's like, I don't think any of these actors who waited this long to say something are now going to be like, oh, now that we read Justin's thing, we're going to, like, take this back and say something about him. Like, they had to be sure about what they were saying. That's why they waited so long to say it.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Colleen Hoover unfollowing Justin Baldoni, to me, that's kind of damning. Like, there are just a lot of things that I think we're never going to know the full story. But at the heart of this, I think what it really is like semantics and how you interpret text messages. And it's going to be interesting, you know, moving forward. It's just like, he said, she said, the receipts that we have are being read different ways by different people. Mm-hmm. So it's really going to be a matter of how can you convince the jury that this is what this person meant in this text?
Exactly.
That's, like, what it's going to be. And that's going to be completely reliant on each person's individual life experience and who they are. And that's why it can't be a judge. And that's really interesting. So I don't know. I think at the end of the day, my thoughts on this are, I have no idea what happened or what I really think. Like, I don't think I'm team either of them, honestly. Mm-hmm. After all of this, I'm just like, I mean, of course, I don't want to be wrong about my initial thoughts, but if I am, that's fine. But I'm just kind of like, there's just a lot that I feel like I still don't know. I honestly feel like I am more confused now, which maybe was the goal,
mm-hmm.
you know, is just to muddy the waters a little bit more. So everything Blake's saying is not taken as gospel.
I guess that's true, but I think I still, it didn't really change my opinion. It made me think I probably wouldn't want to like go to a party with Blake Lively. Mm-hmm. Like it made me think that, I guess.
It made me think, but I'm also like, sorry, not to be like a theater girly, but like, do you know how many people I have like had insane disagreements with in shows? Do you know how many directors I've had disagreements with? Like, I have had some moments in casts where like, I can see how this happens. Like, mm-hmm. it just, this is so normal. Like, I was in a show and I had a director come up to me and say, Caroline, I can tell that you fucking hate the guy playing your fiance. It is all over your face. I need you to fix it. And I was like, I'm the best actor here. What do you mean? Just kidding.
That's how much Caroline hated him.
I was like,
him.
What? And so then I like, she was like, put whoever's face you have to in front of his, just like figure it out. And after that I did. And it was like, not a problem again. But I mean, it fucking happens and people fake it. And like, if you were to ask that guy anything about me, he would tell you a million horrible things. And if you were to ask me anything about him, I would do the same thing. And everyone knew we didn't like each other. And people are going to choose the sides of the person they like the most or the person who they relate to the most. It just is what it is. The advantage I have there is he wasn't the director. You know what I mean? Like, it's not. But yeah. There, I was in a show with someone who was a director who made things very personal towards me. And it was very uncomfortable and it was very weird. And like, theater breeds those kinds of interactions. And
because the ego is like so
the
crazy.
The ego, the closeness where it's like, no, we can talk
like
about
the
these
vulnerability.
Things. I have had, you know,
weaponized vulnerability.
Yes,
is rampant.
Exactly. And like, I've had so many directors say, like, oh, well, you know, you're not so many directors, but I like had a director who was like, oh, you're supposed to be like the super sexual part. Like, you need to get in touch with your sexual side. I mean, watch The Black Swan where he's like, do you touch yourself? Touch mm-hmm. yourself. Like, that happens everywhere in theater where it's like the lines are crossed and blurred. Blake has worked in Hollywood for so long with people on networks and like people who like are keeping these safeguards in place. Gossip Girl, you don't think those safeguards were firmly fucking in place?
I do wonder, because I feel like the intimacy coordinator job has become so much more prevalent. Like, yes. I wonder if back then.
Well, it's not mandatory.
But it's like, so much. But I mean, like, I feel like in the last couple of years, people are taught, like, we hear about it in interviews.
Well, it's
and
with
I just,
the Me
like,
Too movement.
When I think,
you know,
about
there's
Gossip
more protection.
Girl, and I think about the kind of scenes that they were filming, did they have? Was it? It wasn't normal, I feel like, to have one.
Well, I wonder if they did have one, but. If they did, I it's things like that that make me think Blake Lively is like, well, I know how it goes. The intimacy coordinator will be there on set. I'll see her there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
That's another thing about this is that it does go to the court of public opinion.
Yeah.
But this is an industry that most of us, we don't know what's normal.
No.
We don't know. I mean, like the whole red carpet thing. I'm like, well, if it's the friends and family, is it normal for them to not be on the carpet?
I know.
Is it normal? Like, I don't know.
I know. It's
it
really,
doesn't sound normal.
And like, what they're saying is that neither of them, you know, they're saying Blake had no malicious intent. They're saying Justin had no malicious intent. I'm like, that's probably true. They mm-hmm. both probably didn't have malicious intent.
Until they did.
And like, this is just such an unfortunate circumstance
and
for
I'm
both
sure
parties.
I'm sure this won't be the last we talk about it.
No,
but
that is the deep dive. We can move on from it. But I did just want to, I wasn't going to do it, but then we got an overwhelming number of people who
good.
Wanted it.
And we've got about 10 minutes to do our rotations.
Okay, great. I'm on Dream, right? Mine will be quick.
I think so. Hormone harmony. Road warriors, let's get real. Managing PMS can be difficult. When I get on to record the podcast with Caroline, it can be tough sometimes to lock into a cheerful mood. But good news. With the help of Hormone Harmony, I am able to manage my PMS and so much more. It helps me balance my moods and even improves my sleep quality. Hormone Harmony is dedicated to making women's lives better. One of the ways they achieve this is through science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. These help your body adapt to stressors. Hormone Harmony is third-party tested, non-GMO, and gluten and dairy-free. It's no wonder to me a new bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds.
If you can even believe it, for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code prettylittlepodcast at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code prettylittlepodcast for 15% off today.
Okay, so Phoebe and I watched The Last Showgirl last night. Oh my God, made me cry like a freaking baby. And we will make a video talking about it later tonight.
It was so good.
Let's do it later. But it was so good. It was beautiful to watch. I'm putting in my dream rotation a trifecta. We're starting with Pammy Anderson. She broke my little heart in this movie, but she did also kind of piss me off. But like, I just think this movie was such a like metaphor for her own life. You know what I mean? We go from the sex symbol and the her, I mean, her having like the first sex tape that's leaked, and we get her Baywatch and all this shit. And then it's like, now she's older and people see her differently. And it's just interesting. We're getting a big theme in Hollywood movies, like aging and that kind of thing. And it honestly is very depressing. So she's on there.
Maybe it'll make it better though. Maybe we'll,
I hope
talking about it might make it feel easier.
Kiernan Shipka.
She's great.
I thought she was fabulous in this movie.
And it's the first time I feel like I've ever seen her in anything where she's not playing like a kid.
I know. I felt like she was, like she was like a real actor, not like reading like campy lines and shit. Like this movie also is very much just like a snapshot of like a moment in time kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You don't get any before or after of this like 2 week period in this person's life. So there is that whole story with like her daughter and Dave Bautista. And it's like, you don't get any of that. I'm like, oh, okay. We're just supposed to like, and I kind of do love movies like that where it's like, they're like, we're not going to give you anything else. It's just
sometimes
what's happening.
People try to, it can be
it's too much. Yeah.
It was perfect. Yes. I didn't have any notes for the movie.
I thought it was great. My one note is what I had a couple questions, but we'll talk about it later. Once everyone's seen it, because it's not out yet. Anyway, and then Jamie Lee Curtis, who was my favorite performance in the movie.
She killed.
She was standout. She was so good. I love seeing her in a role like this. Like, I don't normally see her in. I mean, she's great in everything, but, and I also, in real life, I just, like, think she is such a gem, a national treasure. But anyway, when you guys can go see The Last Showgirl, you gotta go and let us know what you think. It's beautiful.
Brenda Song is in it.
Brenda Song's in it. She didn't make the dream rotation because she, and that's how good the other performances were. That, like, Brenda Song didn't make it because I was honestly thrilled to see her on my screen. I think she's beautiful. I thought she was great. Her character had the least amount of depth, I thought. Mm-hmm. Except when she helps her out of the audition.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It was, I cried all night long thinking
and
about
that little
movie.
That little voiceover, I was just not expecting. And it is, like, it's such a, I know it's not Sofia Coppola, but the Coppolas do
Gia
have
Coppola
this thing.
Did this.
Where, like, the little, it's very, like, Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette, like when you just get those snapshots of like the, like in Marie Antoinette, it's like all the shoes or like XYZ. And then
all the beautiful,
and this, like seeing like the sink with the toothpaste eyelash.
Yes!
Or like seeing the curlers. Like it's just like,
well, and that's my whole favorite thing in the world is a dressing room. Like I love a dressing room. And especially a dressing room in the theater where it's like they had to kind of get makeshift with it and it's like not supposed to be a dressing room. So they just like have mirrors and chairs and like lights and whatever. And they have the racks of these beautiful costumes and everyone's sitting around with the wig caps and they're like kind of naked and they're putting on their full face of makeup and just talking about their lives. And like there's a scene at the end of the movie where Brenda Song, Kiernan Shipka and Pam just all sit and like hug on the floor in their costumes.
That's my favorite.
Oh my God.
Like, like little
and they
picture
they
the
go
movie.
Through this whole thing where they're like calling her like the mom and she's like, I don't want to be the mom. Like she just wants to be the showgirl, you know? And it's like, it's just so beautiful. I loved it so much. And that scene, and like there is that dressing room friendship bond that like transcends age and life experience and everything. And it's like either you really become a family with the people you're in a show with. And I feel like they captured the essence of the dressing room and that culture so perfectly. And it is so beautiful to watch, like seeing the jewel, because it's also Vegas showgirls. It's like the jewels and the feathers and the colors, like it's, they're beautiful. Anyway. Okay. That's my dream.
I'm looking up the release date of the movie.
It's the 8th, I think. January 8th.
Yes. January
8th. Nailed it.
So this Friday.
So you guys can watch it soon. Let us know what you think. We'll talk about it more once it's out. But yeah.
Okay. My nightmare, guys, sorry, is so boring. It's just probably going to be Southern Charm people because that's all I've been watching.
Oh my God.
Go back to work tomorrow. I've blitzed through like 3 seasons of Southern Charm in the last like 3 days.
Wow.
Don't say it like it's impressive.
Well, it is.
Well, it's kind of.
Well, Phoebe, it is.
In a depressing way. First is going to be Ashley, who's the girl that Thomas Ravenel dates.
Thomas Ravenel better be on your fucking nightmare.
T-Rav's also there. And then Naomi's boyfriend. What the hell is his fucking name? Matul.
Oh.
He is a tool.
That's for dang sure.
There we go. But guys, I can't believe I just missed all this.
All the Southern Charm. I know. I can't believe I did too. I was literally in college there.
Dude, I know. They just went to Kudu and I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God. Caroline, are you there?
Yeah. It was when you were in school. I was like, I wonder.
Look in the background. Yeah. Southern Charm is so good. Guys, Bravo comes back this week. This is amazing.
Soft launch this past week.
Yeah, but we're going to have Beverly Hills, Salt Lake, and Southern Charm this week. Mm-hmm. So
and
that
watching
is...
Southern Hospitality.
And Traders this week.
Yes.
Oh my God, did you watch like the first preview?
No.
We get this preview and I don't know if it was...
Don't tell me what happens.
I'm not, but it was either a Bella twin or Gabby and they see Sandoval pull up and they go, is that Sandoval? I'm not saying hi to him. And they literally like from the jump, it's like,
oh my God,
we fucking hate this guy. And I convinced Kelly to watch it. I was like, Kelly, this is the perfect show for you to watch because you're going to know so many of these people that Phoebe and I talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't watch any reality TV really.
That's
so I'm
wild.
Like, it must be so boring. But if you watch just this show... You'll get Sandoval, Sierra. I was like, Chriselle's in it. You already know her. You got some housewife. Like, you will have such a good picture of, like,
mm-hmm.
who we are, our characters, the main players in our lives.
Well, exactly. Our friends and enemies.
Of course. So there were other things you guys submit for us to talk about, but obviously the lawsuit had to take precedence today. So make sure you're tuning in to next week's podcast. This Thursday, we have our recap of season 6, episode 7, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Pretty Little Liars. It's a fun episode. We just recorded it. Really, really fun. So make sure you listen to that. And then I suspect one of our podcasts this week this month on the Patreon will be diving into like everything we didn't get to because we had to do hard hitting journalism. So you're going to want to make sure you sign up for the Patreon. Also because Addie Brown, my BFF from college, our amazing episode is up and it's a laugh riot. It's very funny. We name names. If you want to feel like you
except for one name that I was listening to you guys tell the story and I was like, how many more times can they say the name?
And the limit did not exist, you found?
Yeah, I was like, Jesus.
I can't wait to listen and it turns out that there's like one you'd miss and so it's not, now everyone knows every time it beeps who it is, but that's fine. Yeah, we really tell all. We talk about memories. We talk about crazy Connell lore that you guys know about, but you get kind of another vantage point. It's really fun, don't you think?
We actually, okay, here's a little sneak, just a little quick peek behind the curtain because we realized this after we recorded the episode. We tell a story about when Addie saw Caroline agog aghast leaving one of her performances. And we realized that not only does Addie have that memory, but Gibson also thought it was her memory.
So my friend group, the Bombshells, we've got Gibson, Clyde, and Addie. They all three of them were in the same show that Addie has this memory of. And Addie's talking about this memory of seeing me like jaw dropped, like I can't believe my eyes watching them in the show, which I'm sure is not the truth. I'm sure I looked like I was smiling ear to ear.
There's multiple people who have the
multiple
who have
eyewitness
the same
reports. And then Gibson goes, wait, that was my story. I was like, wait, what? She goes, yeah, I saw you out there. And I was like, God damn it, Caroline Connell's out there. I just want her to like me. And I was like, amazing that after that not flattering moment from me, you both were like, and I want to be her friend. We weren't friends at that time.
Oh,
and we didn't
God.
Become friends for like 2 more years.
That's
so crazy. So anyway, go listen to that. It is also, if you're not an honorary Connell sister, you can just buy the app. So very, very fun. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Please, please, please leave us a 5-star review. Follow us on Instagram at the Pretty Little Podcast. The Owen Podcast is a 0. We love you so much and we will see you next week.
And I'm walking. Time is ours, as is the night.
The night! A technology you can't even perceive. Like, I'm sorry. That is what I want printed out and framed in
Don't
my room.
Mess with Blake Lively.
I'll know I made it when I get an email like that.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guaranteed details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.